You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Umiko Niwa. She is talking to us from West Virginia. Umiko, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Is that where you are? Are you in West Virginia?
Not West Virginia. I'm in Richmond, Virginia. I just graduated from the VCU. VCU in Richmond, and sort of stuck here in quarantine in Richmond.
So what's been happening? Like, we're talking on August 19th. We're still right in the middle of the pandemic. How are things going in Richmond? Just in
going
general,
good.
In terms of the pandemic. Yeah?
Yeah, it is. It's surprisingly sort of a good time for having just graduated. Quarantine is allowing myself and my partner to sort of make work in our studio. And
so tell me a little bit about what you're working on. What kind of work are you making at the moment?
Well, at the moment, both my partner and I, we just finished up making a body of work to send over to Holding Contemporary in Portland. That was like 2 days ago that we shipped it out. So we are exhausted, but
tell me about that body of work. Let's go through it. What's in that work, and what kind of work is it? If you can kind of flesh, that's where an exhibition there.
Yeah, an exhibition there that'll be going up in about 2 weeks. Yeah, the title of the show is Solar Cucci. I hope I'm allowed to say that on radio.
You are. You can say anything you want on radio. It's internet radio, so, you know, anything you want is okay.
We were describing it to the curator, and when he asked us what we should title the exhibition, my partner and I felt sheepish, and it felt like a prank call to someone. But it's about solar punk. It's about sort of reimagining different modes of existence, and solar punk, the genre being this idea that, like, in the future, we can subsist off of not just solar energy, but different sorts of, like, renewable energy, and living in sort of these more, like, biosphere, biodome architecture that you see a lot out in, like, New Mexico and Arizona.
So what will be in the show? Tell me, like, walk me through that a little bit. So that's the kind of content, the idea. What will people see when they come in?
It's interesting because my partner is Black, and I am Japanese American. We're both trans. So there's many sort of intersections to the work.
So tell me a little bit about the objects that people will see. What are they looking at? How do they get involved in the issues that you're talking about?
So my work, where the works that I've been making, has sort of dealt with, like, plant life, looking towards the plant as offering a different mode of sort of gender identity, expression, sexuality, a different mode of existing, and adorning.
And so tell me about the objects themselves, or you could describe it, that both of you have. What are the objects? What are the materials?
Yeah, so the objects, like the materials, are a lot of them are burls. So sort of to describe a burl would be like a part of a tree where it's lumpy, looks like cauliflower, potato, mashed potato. It's kind of grotesque in nature, but also incredibly beautiful. And we've been sort of carving them into.
And both of you are making this work together, right? I mean, keep going, but this is kind of collaboratively built.
Yeah, collaboratively built, and we would sort of take these burls, pieces of wood that we find, and we would carve into them and adorn them with different like jewelry and gems, and just this like idea of like adorning plant life.
There's so many issues there that these kind of speak to symbolically. How does the audience get involved in that? Is it also text, or that's something that they just kind of intuit or understand through the objects? It sounds like, in a way, it's the content is very important for them to understand the messages and the relationship with your partner and a number of issues. How are those communicated?
They'll be communicated through writing that will be presented or offered together with the show, so that the viewers are sort of able to like access it through the various readings and writings that we've been sort of inspired by and pulling from.
And tell me about this show. So this show is going to open in 2 weeks. How will it open? Because we're still in the middle of the pandemic, and everything seems so, tender around that. How visitors come in, how the place is set up. How will that happen?
You know, I don't know. We're not quite sure. Maybe it's by appointment only. It feels like 2 weeks. During this time period, it's like a lifetime, and things could change so much. But I don't know. I also like the sort of appointment only system where people can really like spend time with the work and not sort of like feel this need to like move on to the next piece because there's someone breathing down their neck behind them, and you know, they're able to sort of contemplate what the work is about and how it makes them feel, and to just sort of spend time in the space, either alone or with somebody else. So I think that's probably how it's going to open.
That's interesting, yeah. And tell me about that space. This is, where will that be? Is that an alternative space? Or tell me a little bit about that space.
Yeah, it's a space in Portland, Oregon, and I've never met the gallery owners, Iris and Tiffany, but they are good friends with a curator that we're working with here in Richmond, Chase Westfall, and he basically, during our second year of graduate school, my partner was one of my classmates, was in the cohort, but he sort of talked to us and reached out, and we were supposed to do a show that he was curating, but due to COVID, it got postponed and got moved over to Holding Contemporary, and they seem like super wonderful people. And a great space to show in, so we're super excited.
That's cool. So is that an artist-run space, something like that, or a kind of nonprofit that's been around for a while? What's the nature of it?
I believe the nature is it's not either of those two strictly, but they have. Like, we're, through this show, we're having a thing where 2.5% of their cut and 2.5% of our cut, you know, sort of totaling 5%, were going to earmark for like various different causes, sales to different causes that we strongly believe in and is part of what we make the work about. So like my partner is Black and non-binary, and myself, I'm Japanese and a trans woman, and so 5% of sales for each work will go to various trans person of color causes in the Portland area. I have a list somewhere, but there's
I like that. Yeah, you can even, we can have links to some of those things in this interview, so people can donate also if they want to those causes. So let's speak a little more about that, because you know, that seems important to the message of these works and the content of these works, right? Mm-hmm. Your relationship and both of, you know, how you present yourselves to the world, who you are, that mm-hmm. seems enormously important and, you know, part of ongoing discussion. So how does that figure into the work? How do people understand a little bit about who both of you are and how that, you know, also leads into the importance of donating to those charities, which I think is great, because that also makes something clear, right? When people are told when they're about to buy something that these are the charities that a portion of the proceeds will go to, that tells them something else about what's happening in this show. So how does the imagery in there, if it does, point mm-hmm. to being a trans woman or your partner being non-binary? How does that if possible, how does that visually translate? Is there any kind of visual signifiers for both of those issues, both of those
yeah.
topics?
So I think even without sort of the viewer reading text, I'm going to like refer back to an old series of work that I've made that was called Daphne Adorned. And there was a series of works that I made where viewers would come into the gallery and they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't read anything. They wouldn't have any sort of access, but it's basically these pewter cast pieces that are sort of like stick figure creatures. And they look jewelry-like, and they're bent into different poses and shapes throughout the gallery. So they're climbing up the walls, they're hanging off of the ceiling, they're standing on the floor. And I would sort of adorn these jewelry-like pieces with flowers and leaves and different sort of plant materials that I would forage throughout Richmond City on various little walks that I would do. And it's this whole sort of like way of thinking through or presenting gender as a performative construct, and but not thinking of it through like humans performing gender, but plant life, animal life performing gender, and thereby sort of bypassing the sort of gut reaction you would have to gender performativity. Like if you see earrings on a tree or on a flower, you don't have these sorts of like, you know, innate response that might like elicit like a deep down homophobic or transphobic, some sort of thing, you know, it's yeah, bypasses some of the knee-jerk response that we might have to gender and sexuality and thinking of it outside of the binary. And so the works that we made together, that's a large part of it, because some of these pieces are burls that look like, you know, sometimes when you look at like a tree and you can see like a human face, or what seems like a human face, present itself and emerge out of the tree bark. Like simply just putting like an earring on that burl and giving it little sunglasses or makeup or something of that sort. Like, it's a way of thinking through, like, how do you humanize maybe like the dehumanized being, not just the plant, but also in terms of a human being that's been dehumanized, like black bodies, trans bodies, needing to be adorned or to have ornaments on them to sort of reach this level of personhood or to be humanized and to be seen as a woman or as an equal or, yeah. I'm not sure if that
It is clear. Yeah, no, that's interesting, and I'm so glad you articulated it that way, because that's such a difficult idea to communicate, really. And this is such an important issue. With, I mean, as you said, it's kind of performative, you know, and how. People move beyond a knee-jerk reaction and understand something deeper and more humanizing about you know, those bodies, like you said, trans bodies or black bodies. It sounds like that is what this show is essentially trying to communicate, right? That kind of
yeah.
Humanizing idea.
Yeah, and I think there's also sort of a therapeutic aspect that both my partner Pete and I we've noted is that there's like, we've collaborated a couple times in the past, and every time that we've made work together, we talk about like reparenting ourselves through making work, and making work as a form of therapy for ourselves. So like this work, like the Daphne work that I've made in the past, and then some other work, series of works that I've made, and then some parts of the work that we just sent off, is like, at least for me, it's a way of thinking through my own physical body. And so like I describe it to people, I often describe it to people as like Mr. Potato Head. As an art practice, like I make glorified Mr. Potato Heads, where I take a bunch of organic matter and then I create, like I would make like a sculpture of my mother out of a potato, a celery, a carrot, some weeds outside, and a stick. And just through sort of making this grotesque, monstrous assemblage, I'm able to work through this sort of gender and race. And I would often make little creatures of, you know, self-studies. So I would make little self-portraits out of these organic matters, and through making and pulling and changing all these physical aspects and collaging it, making an assemblage, like I'm able to reframe or rework my own sort of identity and think through gender and race. And that's also what we've been doing sort of with the work that we sent off is that.
Well, Miko, thank you. That's really interesting. And, you know, there'll be links to the number of things you mentioned, images for people to see. I want to ask you one more question before we go, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
I am reading I'm reading a bunch of different medical studies on really interesting studies on these things called like deep neural networks, which is like a way of identifying people's age and gender and race online. So I'm sure a lot of listeners know of like different apps that you're able to use, and you take a picture of your face and it tells you what age you are and gender and race. And it's not just like cold lines of code and algorithm, but it's like these deep neural networks are based off of like the brain, the way that the brain works for like cats and mice and bats, and like the way that they visually are able to interpret someone's age and race and whatnot visually. So it's just interesting that there's like there's all these online algorithms that are sort of chimeras made up of, I don't know, like you're being gendered by a cat on one of these apps or websites. And
I love that. That's so interesting. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I love it.
Well, Miko, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today, and I want to wish you well with your upcoming show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.